भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो व्ययम् उदिराये. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm a little lost because I don't have my glasses. The activities of Maharaj Agnidra. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto, 5th Canto, Chapter 2, Text 13. Ka, what? Ba, in, sorry, let's try to repeat the text. Kavadma Britir Adhanar Davirangavati Kavadma Britir Adhanar Davirangavati Kavadmar Britid Adhanar Davidangavati Vishno Kalasya Nimisam Mashkaro Chakarno Vishno Kalasya Nimisam Makaro Chakarno Udvigna mina jugalam dviya pankti sochi Udvigna mina jugalam dviya pankti sochi Asanna bringa nikaran shara in mukante Asanna bringa nikaran shara in mukante Ka what va and Atma Vritti, food for maintenance of the body. Adhanat, by the chewing of betel. Havi, pure sacrificial ingredients. Anga, my dear friend. Bhati, emanate. Vishnu, O Lord Vishnu, Kala, expansion of the body. Así you are. Animisa. Without blinking. On macro. Two brilliant charts. Sha. Also. Karno. Two ears. Udbigna. Restless. Mina Yugalam. Possessing two fish. Dwija Panti. Of lines of teeth. Soshi. Beauty. Asanna. Nearby. Bringa Nikaram. Possessing swarms of bumblebees. Sara. Like a lake. Mukam. Face. Te. Your. Translation. By Sri A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear friend, what do you eat to maintain your body? Because you are Shuvan Betel, a pleasing scent is emanating from your mouth. This proves that you always eat the remnants of food offered to Vishnu. Indeed, you must also be an expansion of Lord Vishnu's body. Your face is as beautiful as a pleasing lake. Your jewel earrings resemble two brilliant sharks with unblinking eyes, like those of Vishnu, and your own eyes resemble two restless fish. Simultaneously, therefore, two sharks and two restless fish are swimming in the lake of your face. Besides them, the white rows of your teeth seem like rows of very beautiful swans in the water. And your scattered hair resembles swarms of bumblebees following the beauty of your face. Purport. The devotees of Lord Vishnu are also his expansions. They are called Vibhinnamsa. Lord Vishnu is offered all kinds of sacrificial ingredients. And because devotees always eat prasad, the remnants of his food, the scent of sacrificial ingredients emanates not only from Vishnu, but also from the devotees who eat the remnants of his food, or the food of his devotees. Agnidra considered Purvashiti an expansion of Lord Vishnu because of the pleasing scent of her body. Aside from that, because of her jewel earrings shaped like sharks, because of her scented scattered hair resembling bumblebees mad after the scent of her body, and because the white rows of her teeth, which resemble swans, Agnidra compared Purvashiti's face to a beautiful lake decorated with lotus flower, fish, swans, and bumblebees. Jnanatimiram dasya jnanam jnana shalakaya chaksurum militam jnana tasmai shri gurave namah. So with your permission, I'm going to try to speak a little bit. So previously, Srimad Bhagavatam is speaking about the activities of Maharaj Priyavrata. So when Maharaj Priyavrata was ready to renounce to this life, he got ready to go to the forest to engage in spiritual activities. So he designated King Agnidra. King Agnidra became the king, and like a perfect king in Vedic culture, he treated all of his citizens like if they were their own sons. That is a big difference in our modern society when we don't know the principles of Vedic culture. We all have experienced that usually politicians, when they get a high position in the government, whatever they do it for their own sake, for their family, closest friends, like that. And I come from a very small country in Latin America that is south of Mexico, between North America and South America. And people, it looks pretty much like India. And we also, I remember growing up, one president in a neighboring country, he became the president, and then after 4 years, he retired and he bought an island on, you know, in Europe. So, and everybody was thinking, how this guy, you know, who was not a very rich people, was able to buy a complete island, you know, after he finished being the president in a very small country. And, you know, like that, growing up, we were able to see all these persons who were not interested in helping the citizens. I do remember I was probably 8 years old or 7 years old, and I went in the countryside. There was a very small village. And every time I had vacation from school, I used to go and spend the time. My relatives, they had a couple of small farms, and I would love to go there with some friends, you know, getting the mangoes, the bananas, and going to the lakes, going to the rivers, like that. But I do remember at that time, I had my first lesson on politics. This general from the army, he was running for the next president. So he came to town, and because it was the major political party, everyone assembled, so I decided to come along. And so they came to the Central Park, and because it was an insignificant village, and the road that will be the main access to the capital city, you know, was in very bad shape. So I do remember the politician telling everybody, you know, and when I become the president, I will pave your road so that you can all go to the capital. And I was thinking, oh, that's amazing. You know, it looks like someone really want to help the inhabitants of this little village. But, you know, some time went by, he was elected the president of the city. And after 4 years, you know, he never paved the road. So that was my first lessons on politics. But in previous ages, when Vedic culture was really strong on this planet, we can see how the Maharaj, how the big kings, they were ruling and doing whatever was needed for the welfare of the citizens. So King Agnidra, he had a desire. He wanted to have a perfect son. So for that, he knew very well that he needed to worship Lord Brahma. And Srila Prabhupada explained, I'm trying to do a little review on the chapter where we, you know, up to today's verse. So he knew that by worshiping Lord Brahma, if he does a puja austerity for Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma will give him a very exalted son. So Agnidra Maharaj, with that desire in his heart, he went to this place that is called Mandara Hill, and he collected flowers and all the paraphernalia that he needed to do his puja and engaged in austerities and meditation. At the same time, Lord Brahma, Srila Prabhupada says that Lord Brahma, he likes good progeny. He likes it. He likes, Lord Brahma knew this King Agnidra is a great king, and now he is going to engage in austerities so that, you know, I can give him a first class song. So, Lord Brahma, he selected a Purvashiti. Purvashiti was an apsara, but it's explained that it was not just a regular apsara, it was the most beautiful of the apsaras. And so the picture is like this. Agnidra Maharaj went to the Mandara Hill and he was engaged in austerities. And it says that near the place where he was staying, his ashram, there was this beautiful park. And then what are the components of a beautiful park? It is explained that it should be a lot of foliage. That means a lot of trees. And if we read in Srimad Bhagavatam in different parts, it's also explained that not just regular trees, but it should be fruit trees. So that when they are giving fruits, it's for the benefits of all the citizens. So besides the trees, there should be clear water. And we have seen here in South India, on the Sahyadri Mountains, there is a beautiful places where all the rivers are crystal clear, something not very easy to see here in India, crystal clear rivers. In Alachua, nearby, there is many rivers that springs from the ground, and everyone calls them springs, and they are extremely crystal clear rivers. Thousands of gallons come out of the ground and they form little rivers, beautiful rivers. Some of them become large rivers. But you could see if you're outside or if you are swimming inside, you can see the fish, you can see the stones, you can see the shells, because they are crystal, crystal clear. So besides that, he said there was plenty of lotus flowers. And also sweet singing of birds. Like here in Mayapur, if you acknowledge, I used to walk all around Mayapur, wherever I go, I walk. And I see so many beautiful birds that we don't have in America. And especially in the evening or in the morning, after Mongol Arctic, when we're going home in a Grihastha park, there is these hundreds of birds. They all come together. I think are the same type of bird because they all sing the same song. And they make a big noise, but it's a beautiful noise. And then all the different birds, you know, here and there, talking to each other, it really creates a very celestial atmosphere. So Purvashiti came to this park. And she spot Agnidra Maharaj. Agnidra Maharaj, she says he was engaged in meditation. His eye was half closed. But when Purvashiti approached, he caught his attention. Purvashiti, she was so beautiful that she attracted the attention of all human beings, but not all only human beings, but also celestial people, people from the higher planets. She was so attractive that was able to attract their minds. How she did that? He said, by her playful movement. And then two very interesting qualities, shyness and humility. In modern society, if a lady is shy and humility, that is not considered very attractive. But in Vedic culture, you know, a very attractive lady should be shy and should be also shows signs of humility by her glances, by her pleasing words, and by the motion of her limbs. So, you know, sometimes we might wonder, how is it that Srimad Bhagavatam or the Acharyas, they comment, you know, on the beauty of woman? Because we understand very clearly that when we become attracted to the beauty of the opposite sex, then, you know, the illusory energy of the Lord really take over us. So, but in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are all these scriptures, how women are beautiful, you know, how their looks, how the way they speak, the way they move, their hips, their waist. And so we might wonder, how is it, you know, because I do remember in America, many years ago, in one temple, I don't remember the name of the temple, but a temple that had a lot of members of the Indian community. At one point, you know, they said, you know, we come to the Sunday feast and we bring our little kids, you know, and suddenly, you know, whoever is giving the class starts speaking, you know, about the beauty of the woman, or you know, sometimes about some of the intimate relationship that they have, you know. And because here in this chapter, also, Agnidra Maharaj, you know, he said his mind became confused. And at one point, he was calling her a Brahmana, but then he says, but you have such a beautiful breast, you have such a beautiful waist, and, you know, his mind was very confused. So, but like that, some members of the Indian community, they complained to the temple president, an ISKCON temple, that how is that you speak all of these sexual things, you know, in class, when our kids are present, wives are present, you know, we don't like it. But the fact of the matter is that Srimad Bhagavatam also gives, establish the real beauty, what beauty is. Otherwise, we will not know what beauty is. Because you see, like in the Western countries, at the present, what is supposed to be the most beautiful ladies, you know, the models, that industry is controlled by homosexuals, by gay people. And they are bringing a different concept of beauty that, according to Vedic knowledge, is not beauty. So if you see, of course, devotees, we don't see that, but sometimes, somewhere or another, we're being able to see some of those fashion, you know, partly fashion shows. And then you see a very skinny girl, you know, with no breasts, no hips, you know, sometimes an attractive face, but short hair, they cut the hair short, you know. They are looking more like men than ladies. And that is what in the Western world, you know, is considered the way they dress, you know, many times like men's too, not very feminine, you know, the way they walk. And it's a new concept, but it's completely opposite to a real concept of beauty, as it's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. And like a year ago or so, I remember we were coming from the temple. We were coming to the temple, and then a young girl, probably 10 years old, you know, I could see the way she was dressed, that it was a local girl, not a devotee, a local girl. She was walking in front of us, and the way she was walking is the way how the models walk, you know, that they have this funny walk. So, definitely, the Western countries is putting all that influence, you know, and people start thinking that beauty is something that really is not. So King Agnidra's mind became a little confused. He was calling the Apsara. You know, a Brahmana, he used different names. You know, most of them were masculines while addressing her. And it's explained also that she was dressed in a yellow garment. And I look in the Sanskrit word, in the shloka, to see if the name was Sari, you know, what kind of name was using. But in reality, Srila Prabhupada just translates like garment, doesn't say, and the Sanskrit word doesn't say that it was a sari, it just says it's a garment. So Agnidra Maharaj, even that she was dressed in yellow silk, he said, due to lusty desires, he asked her, why have you come naked? So that's another example how when the mind becomes confused for lusty desires, you know, even that she was dressed at one point, he was considering that she was undressed. Then he started describing her breast and her sweet speech. And even at one point, like with the shloka we read today, he was considering an expansion of Lord Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu's body. Srila Prabhupada makes a very interesting point. He says that beauty is due to austerity. So it's not that, and I consider it very interesting because, you know, in some countries, there is a lot of beautiful people, and maybe in some other countries, you know, people is not very beautiful. And also, the most Kali Yuga advances, definitely, you know, we become uglier and not very attractive, according to the Vedic description of beauty. So later on, going ahead on the chapter, Agnidra Maharaj asked Purvashiti to become his wife. And using all this beautiful language, you know, he was able to entice her. Of course, she knew, because Lord Brahma sent her, she knew that her work was to get Agnidra Maharaj enticed, you know, to fall in love with her. And Agnidra Maharaj, he was thinking, he realized that that must be the blessings of Lord Brahma, you know, a qualified lady, that I could have a very qualified son. And it's also explained that he was so attracted to her that he was ready to go anywhere with her, either hell or heaven. His interest was in having her company. So I'm sure most of the speakers, like my good god brother Gita Nagari Prabhu, he already gave all the different arguments how we should not become attached to the beauty of women, and how by practicing bhakti yoga we can transcend that consciousness and be able to go back home, back to Godhead. So I'm not going to try to, you know, give more arguments related to that. But I also, the Prabhuji asked me, who is in charge of lining up devotees, speakers for Bhagavatam, he also asked me to tell a couple of stories with Leelas of Lord Jagannath. So I want to tell you two stories. One story, it's written in one of the books that Jananivas Prabhu produced about Lord Jagannath, pastimes of Lord Jagannath in Rajapur. But just happened to be that this devotee is, I think he left today. His name is Radhika Raman. And he told me the story when we were in Alachua. He says that he was Pujari of Lord Jagannath in Rajapur. And then one day, he said, when he was ready to offer Artik, I want to tell this story because it's told in the book, but it's in a little short form. So he said, he, being the Pujari, you know, he was offering the Artik to Lord Jagannath. And then he noticed that a Muslim boy came. And he said, that was strange because usually the Muslim boys will not come to a Hindu temple. So he finished offering the Artik, and then the boy was there in front of the deities. And he finished the Artik, he blew the conch shell, and he told the boy, he said, wait a minute, I'm gonna get you some food from the deity. And so he took the paraphernalia inside to wash it and got some a little plate with Mahaprasad. And when he came, the boy was not there. So he's thinking, oh, unlucky boy, you know, I was ready to give him some Mahaprasad. But the boy was gone. So next day, you know, at the same time, when he's offering Artik, he sees that the little boy is coming. He said, and he's bringing a little basket full of fruit, different kind of fruits. And he's thinking, oh, that's very interesting. You know, the boy is back. So he finished the Artik to Lord Jagannath. And then he approached the boy. The boy comes, you know, he says that this fruit is for them, for them. But also at the same time, he noticed that the boy has a black eye. And so he asked the boy, he takes the fruit and he says, what happened to you? Why do you have a black eye? And so the boy explained that yesterday when you went away, he said, I went into the altar, I walked, and that lady, Lady Subhadra, he had a beautiful necklace with a nice brooch. So I decided to take the brooch from that lady. And then she said, she looked to the white person, Lord Balaram, and Lord Balaram came and said, and he hit me. He hit me on the eye, and I flew back. And then she told Lord Balaram, hit again. And Lord, and so the boy ran away. He said, run away. And that was the reason why you could not see me yesterday. But I told my parents, and my parents told me, no, that's very bad. So you go back, you bring some fruit, you know, for Lord Jagannath, and you give it to the priest, and you apologize. So that's a very sweet story told by Radhika Raman, who was a Pujari at that time. Another story that I want to tell you is it happened in Gitanagari Farm. There is a farm in Pennsylvania in the United States. I was living there for 2 years, 1986-1987. I had an ashram of little boys, but in the morning, every morning for 3 hours, I was working with the oxen. And I learned to work with the oxen. You know, they gave me a young team that they were trained, but not so well trained. And by working with them, you know, by exchanging with them, you know, they became really very expert oxen, working in the fields, doing everything, plowing, disking, you know, whatever it was needed on the field. I learned, I enjoyed it. I knew Srila Prabhupada wanted us to work on the farms, you know, to learn simple living and high thinking. So before that, I had learned, you know, in South America how to milk cows. I knew how to ride horses. But I never knew how to work with oxen. So when I went to Kitanagari, I took that opportunity. And one day, the devotees will cut, you know, especially around this time. I think many times they start around this time, July, August, to cut the trees, the dead trees, so that in the winter we could use it for firewood to warm up the temple and the different houses. So in America, there are some of the trees, you know, that farm is a large farm and they have a good forest. So one day one devotee went and cut this humongous tree, big, big, big tree. And it was hardwood. I don't remember the name of the tree, but it was a humongous tree, probably, to give you an idea, from this end of the table to the wall there, you know, and really large, really, really large, very, very heavy. So another thing we were doing with the oxen is that we will put a yoke on them, and then with chains, you know, heavy chains, we will take the logs, drag them out, and we had what we call an ox power unit that was powered by the oxen. It was a big circular saw, and with that we will cut the firewood, you know, to heat the houses in the winter, because Pennsylvania is in the north and it's very cold in winter time. What we call cold in Mayapur, that's not cold. I remember when I moved there, it was at the end of April, and that day when I arrived that night, you know, it froze. It was at least 30 degrees. Of course, I'm quoting Fahrenheit, but you know, the land froze. So the devotees, the older devotees, they were saying, you know, that this log, and it was in the middle of a forest, thick forest, there was no gate, there was no way to get a tractor. And the devotees, the older devotees, they were saying, even our best oxen will not be able to get that log out of there. One, because, you know, you need to skip so many trees around that tree. And it's too heavy. It's this type of wood that is heavy wood. And definitely, oxen were not going to be able to move them. So another devotee, he was from the Caribbean. You know, he, probably you remember Manu. He was a big guy, strong guy. He went to Vietnam, you know, a couple of times. So he had a Kshatriya spirit. And we were working together with the oxen. So he said, Rama, I think if you get the best two oxen, you know, we can get that big log out of there. And I say, well, everyone is saying that it's impossible. He say, I think we can do it. Why don't we do it? And so I say, okay. So we went to the barn and got the two big, more powerful oxen. Brad, you know, was really strong. And then the tallest one, that it was called Lee. We call him Lee. His name was Vrindavan Leela. So we put a yoke on them, one of the strongest yokes. There was another heavier one, but we were thinking maybe it's too heavy. So we put the yoke on them and we brought a lot of steel chains, very heavy chains. You know, we went in, we got the log, you know, wrapped around with the chains. And then there we go, you know, I start calling them. I start calling them and we will use a whip. Usually the whip, we use it not to hit them, but to call their attention. So by calling them, you know, Emmanuel was on the back also screaming, come on, come on, you know, grab, grab, go, go, go. And we got them on the mood, on the mood. And suddenly, you know, I could see that log started moving, you know, little by little, little by little. So I said, yes, we're gonna get it. Because the hardest part is when you start. When you start, you know, all the weight is there. Once they are pulling, they can keep on walking. So I start calling them, you know, and suddenly they try, because we have this oxen, his name was Bharat, The hardest they pull, the hardest he will pull. You know, and he was really trying, so I was calling him, Brad, go, Brad, come on, get up, Brad. And the moment really start pulling, you know, the joke that was made of heavy wood, snap in half, broke in half. And we were like, whoa, you know, amazing. But we knew there was another joke in the barn, heaviest and stronger. So we decided, let's go and get the other joke. So we went with the oxen, you know, put the heaviest joke. We came back, you know, we tied them up once again. And we start, you know, calling them. And they were already, you know, fired up. And somewhere another, you know, that log came out. We were, you know, like dancing between the trees, you know, trying not to hit another tree or we will get stuck. And somewhere another, we got it out, and then we didn't know what to do with the log, you know, humongous log. And so we said, let's bring it, you know, to the back of the temple. And so we went all the way to the back of the temple. When we got to the back of the temple, you know, the oxen were really tired, perspiring hard, you know, and sweating. And we pat them, we hugged them, we embraced them, you know. And then we left the log there. It was such a precious wood that nobody wanted to split it for firewood. So that log was there for many, many, many years. And then, you know, after some times I moved to Alachua. And after probably 15 years in Alachua or 16 years in Alachua, on 2004, we decide, there was three directors, you know, I was doing I was taking the position of the temple president, but there were other two devotees, Bhadra Prabhu, who is Indian by birth. He was cultivating the Indian community and organizing festivals. And Lakshmini Singha Prabhu, Prabhupada's disciple, he was longtime temple president in New York. He was in charge of the devotee community who lives outside and around the Alachua temple. So we decided that we wanted to start a big time Ratha Yatra festivals on the major cities in Florida. And for that, you know, we needed a Ratha Yatra cart. We needed a large Jagannath, good size Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra Diris. And so we started making all the different arrangements to make it happen. So we found out that the first Ratha Yatra cart that Srila Prabhupada rode in New York, someone had it in storage in a countryside of New York countryside. And so we made the arrangement, we gave a donation, we brought it all the way from New York to Alachua, so we have the Ratha Yatra card. And then, you know, what are we going to do with the deities? Maybe order from India? Well, we didn't know exactly. And then one Mataji, Prabhupada disciple, forget her name right now, she said, I know this devotee, that I'm forgetting his name, it's also Prabhupada disciple, he live around Boston. He said he's a sculptor, he knows how to carve. I'll ask him to make Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra Diris. And so, you know, she contacted the devotee said, no problem, I just gotta locate wood, you know, because we wanted good-sized diris. And then, you know, after some time, 6 months or so, he called Alachua and he said, you know, I'm working on the deities. I got a big piece of wood and I'm, you know, he said, I got it from Gita Nagari at the farm. And, you know, he said, wow, wonderful, you know, a tree from Gita Nagari, you know, from the farm. And so he has called the deities. And then, you know, he brought the deities to Alachua and we had a festival, you know, we welcomed the deities, we installed the deities. And then the Mataji took them into her home because we didn't have enough room on the temple itself. So The Prabhuji came also, and he likes festivals, and he was also participating in a festival itself, and so we did all the program, big prasadam, big festival. And then when we were talking, you know, I said, from where? I asked him, Prabhuji, how you got the log? You know, how you got the fire, the wood to make the deities? You say, from Gitanagari. He said, yes. He says, there was, you know, I went to Gitanagari and I was looking, but then I realized I cannot cut a fresh tree, you know, to make deities, otherwise they're going to split. It have to be a season, you know, all log of wood that I can make the deities from. And he said, and while walking around the temple, I found this humongous log behind the temple, he said, that someone had cut. We never knew who cut it. Someone cut it, you know, and someone brought it there and left it behind the temple. And he said, because it has been there for 15 or 16 years or so, he said, I was thinking maybe it's rotten, but it's this hard wood, you know. And so he started scraping the top, and he realized that after the bark, you know, the wood wasn't shape, was perfect. And he said, and that's the wood that I used to carve the deities. And that was the log that we brought from the forest when the oxen, you know. So was a big surprise for me, you know, that piece of wood, Lord Jagannath had a plan for the future. And that's how the Ratha Yatra festivals started in the state of Florida. At this point, I believe there's 6, 7, or 8 Ratha Yatras only on the state of Florida. And the way it works is that Bhadra Prabhu, he goes in contact the Indian community, the local Indian community, on, you know, whatever it is, whatever city it is in Florida, like Miami or Orlando or Sarasota or Tampa. You know, he goes, make friends with the local Indian community, and then they come with the Lakshmi to pay for the festival. And so we bring in a truck the Ratha Yatra cart, you know, on assemble. We bring the Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra deities in a nice car. And we also bring in 3 or 4 buses, you know, 400 devotees from Alachua. So when we get to the Ratha Yatra site in any of the big cities, you know, we have a big Ratha Yatra cart, we have beautiful large Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra deities, and we have 400 devotees. And the local Alachua Indian devotees that are very excellent cooks, they also cook with the money paid by the Indian community. They also cook a festival for 5,000, 6,000 people. You know, so we go with 400 devotees, big kirtan, big harinam, you know, the lords in the ratha carts, you know, and everyone gets benefit. And like that, there is at least 6 or 7 ratha yatras in the whole state of Florida. Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.